Allobiont explores how organisms in the living world are really superorganisms, formed by a host and all of its communities of microorganisms. To explore these interactions in sickness and in health, I interview researchers at the crossroads of microbiology, evolution, immunology, computational biology, and beyond. Nicola, do you want to start by presenting yourself and maybe talking to us a bit about your background?
My name is Nicola. I'm a PhD student at Leiden University. I'm a trained synthetic organic chemist, and I'm working on modifying antibiotics to fight antimicrobial resistance. We can do that in a number of different ways. So we can use it to modify existing antibiotics to improve their effectiveness. We can develop new antibiotics, or we can investigate compounds that block resistance pathways of bacteria, allowing our old antibiotics to work again.
I'm quite interested in knowing what led you to the field of antibiotic resistance, which, you know, you have a chemical background, and obviously it's not straying from chemistry because you apply your chemical knowledge, but what maybe like led you to that specialization, or did you find particularly interesting about applying it to antibiotics?
Yeah, so it's never something I'd really considered at the beginning. Well, I did medicinal chemistry with medicinal chemistry as my course. So I've always been interested in drugs in that way. And during one of the exercises in my course, we had to pick a drug class or something to talk about and go in depth with. And I chose infectious diseases. So I learned a lot about antiparasitics and then antimicrobials, which I eventually decided that is what I wanted to do my research in. And plus, just I find antibiotics incredibly important. And the more I learn about them, the more I realize how much they affect our everyday lives and what will happen when we run out. And I just got really passionate about it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it's not the easiest field to choose, because we often talk about an antibiotic discovery void in that last 30 years, maybe more than 30 years now. We haven't really developed new classes of antibiotics. So maybe would you describe your research more like modifying existing antibiotics, like slightly tweaking their properties, or developing entirely new classes?
Well, in our group, we have a mixture of different projects in this. I have worked on tweaking antibiotics, ones that we have used in the past, maybe make them more effective against the bacteria, but I'm also going to be involved in projects where I find completely new antibiotics. And so there's got to be a mixture of both, because we know these old antibiotics work. Well, they did work at some point, and we have a basis for our understanding. But yeah, making new antibiotics for the future is probably a good idea. So there's no resistance against those ones. But it will probably come up at some point. That's another challenge of antibiotic discovery, is that you know the work that you're going to do, you'll eventually have resistance against it, because bacteria are constantly evolving and trying to fight back. But yeah, so it's definitely a mixture of both. We do both strategies for finding new therapies.
Okay, and then maybe we can talk more specifically about your recent work, which is on beta-lactamases. Can you describe what they are and why they're relevant to antibiotic resistance?
Beta-lactamases are resistance enzymes found in bacteria, and they cause resistance to our beta-lactam antibiotics. We have three classes of that, which are penicillins, cephalosporins, and carbapenems. So there are quite a lot of antibiotics that we rely on that have a beta-lactam moiety in the structure. So the beta-lactamase enzymes break the ring, leading the antibiotic to be ineffective anymore. So and there's two types of beta-lactamase enzymes. There's serine beta-lactamases and metallo-beta-lactamases. So in the active site of these beta-lactamase enzymes, the serine ones use a serine amino acid to attack the beta-lactam ring, and the metallo-beta-lactamases have a zinc core, and they activate a water molecule, which will inactivate the ring. Now, fortunately, we have some inhibitors of serine beta-lactamases that we use in clinics. So we can use a combination therapy of some of these inhibitors and the beta-lactam antibiotics. But unfortunately, we don't have any for metallo-beta-lactamases. And we're struggling now because there are new beta-lactamase enzymes that are breaking down our carbapenem antibiotics, such as meropenem. And meropenem is a last resort antibiotic. So we rely on this antibiotic when there are no other antibiotics left to treat an infection. So now that there's resistance developing for these ones, we're a bit scared. So if we can find an inhibitor of these metallo-beta-lactamases that we could use in clinic, then that would be good. But it's kind of difficult because there's a lot of inhibitors that we can use that maybe strip the zinc from the active site of the enzyme. But a lot of our enzymes also use zinc as a cofactor, you know? So how do we make it specific towards these metallo-beta-lactamases and not any of our own enzymes, which is, I think, one of the major problems why we don't have an inhibitor for these enzymes so far.
Yeah, I mean, in your development process, how do you screen for that toxicity and try to detect it as early as possible?
Yeah, it's difficult, right? I actually, my work in that field wasn't developing a new inhibitor. I took the inhibitors that have already been described by various different papers, and I put them through various assays, so we were able to compare them accurately, because there was a lot of different ways that they were measured, how well they are working against the enzymes. And I took them all and did a proper screen to really compare and see which ones work best. But yeah, like you said, it's kind of hard to say really early on which ones. You kind of know that the ones that are strong zinc chelators are probably going to have side effects in the body. So you're looking for inhibitors maybe that don't necessarily strip zinc from the active site, but maybe sit in the active site of the enzyme itself.
And the assays you do you go directly to whole live bacteria and see whether they get killed, or do you assay it against its isolated molecular target?
Well, for the metallo-beta-lactamases, I'll call them MBLs. So for MBLs, we actually have we have expressed the protein and purified it. So we have it in our lab. So we can do both. The easiest thing, well, the thing that we do most often is test our antibiotics or antibiotic combinations against live bacteria. That's where you're going to find out whether they're effective, because you can have an inhibitor that works well against the enzyme itself, but then maybe it has problems actually getting into the bacteria itself. Because there's an outer membrane in gram-negative bacteria, which stops a lot of things getting through. But the enzyme assays are very easy to do as well. So I enjoyed doing both.
And the ultimate outcome you get, is it just to halt growth or to kill them? Because that's a distinction often made in antibiotics, that there's bacteriostatics that halt growth without necessarily killing, and then bactericidals. I mean, obviously this definition has caveats because it's made in vitro. And I suppose if you leave a bacteriostatic long enough and at high enough concentration, you'll end up killing it. But is the ones you typically achieve elimination of the bacteria and death?
Yeah, so we usually do an assay called the minimum inhibitory concentration. So we're looking for usually a pretty low concentration of an antibiotic to kill the bacteria. So you're looking for where there's no growth. It's difficult to say. We do a lot of, we look for antibiotics that are good at killing the bacteria, but we don't really work a lot with the bacteriostatic ones.
Okay. And you're a chemist, so a lot of your work is very much bench-based and practical, but how do you also have a balance of computational methods, and how much of this can you predict with algorithms or with models? In that, let's say I add a methyl group here, do you have, let's say, a program that could predict the outcome, or do you really have to go out and test it, do it on the bench?
Yeah, the easiest thing to do is usually just do it on the bench. We'll have an we'll have an idea of maybe we can be like, oh, let's change this group to see if we can enhance the activity. And the easiest thing for us to do usually is just to do the chemistry itself and then go on and test it. There are some modeling softwares and everything, but usually we've got the compound already before we take it to modelers who try and see it in the active site of an enzyme or something. But yeah, for me, it's a lot of bench-based work.
And then obviously inactivating the antibiotic through enzymes is only one mechanism of resistance, but bacteria also use other ways like overexpressing efflux pumps to expel the antibiotic or encoding an alternative molecular target. Are these other types of, well, mechanisms harder to target with medicinal chemistry, or, you know, do we also have inhibitors of these processes?
Not really. I haven't done anything with efflux pumps. I know they're there. It's pretty hard to avoid them sometimes. But yeah, the easiest thing we can do is maybe try and block a resistance mechanism. But there are other things that you can do to antibiotics to just increase how well they work. We can try and like maybe attach something to them so it's easier to get through the cell. If that's maybe something that's also blocking them or making the bacteria resistant.
So, I mean, these inhibitors would obviously be used in combination with the existing antibiotics. Is that maybe more or less the direction we're going in? We'd have to develop combinations of antibiotics instead of, you know, monotherapies?
Well, it's definitely a possibility for the future, depending on what the resistance pathway is, especially like the enzymes like the MBLs that break down the beta-lactamases, beta-lactam antibiotics. If we want to use the beta-lactam antibiotics with one of those enzymes present, the best way we can do that is probably block the enzyme. But there are plenty of other things. Yeah, bacteria are very different than human cells, you know? We've got a lot of essential pathways that we could target in bacteria. So another thing we can do is possibly just exploit different targets that we have never touched before, that there are no current antibiotics for, which is something that our group is also looking at, which will be an exciting thing in the future.
What kind of targets are they? Because we usually target, you know, the cell wall, the ribosomes, but what are these kind of unexplored
targets? I mean, yeah, unexplored targets are all maybe to do with cell wall synthesis, or they're in the cell membrane. I can't really say much about which enzymes we're looking at because it's not published or anything yet. So, the targets are essential for bacterial life that we don't already have. We're learning more about bacteria constantly. So finding new possible pathways to target is very exciting for the future of antibiotic development.
And I mean, so I suppose these approaches would be more narrow spectrum, because if they aren't these core components that are conserved across all bacteria, well, there would only be a small population that's susceptible to them. But I mean, in a way, narrow spectrum also has a lot of advantages, and it's what we're looking for, because, well, not only with broad spectrums, we select for resistance strains, not specifically, but we're also depleting our own symbiotic bacteria. And there's, you know, almost every day a paper about how important they are to our metabolism, to outcompete pathogens and so on. So I guess, do you think that developing narrow spectrums is the direction in it?
The problem is narrow spectrum antibiotics are incredibly difficult to develop. There are a lot of conserved pathways in bacteria. The most important ones are conserved across bacteria. That's how they survive. It's very difficult to find a target that would only affect one specific type of bacteria. I completely understand like why we would want to go down that way. But yeah, broad spectrum antibiotics just are so much more useful just now. With the current way of science at the moment, broad spectrum is the best way to do it. Because for also narrow spectrum antibiotics, we would need to know what the bacterial infection is.
Right.
You know, so say you've got a bacterial infection, we would need to like take a sample of this figure out exactly which bacteria is, and then decide which narrow spectrum antibiotic to use against it. So, you know, maybe you don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's just a small infection, but maybe an ear infection or something, it's not a life or death situation in that moment, maybe. But for a lot of infections, especially in hospitals, you want to treat them as soon as possible. But yeah, definitely what you're saying, the microbiome is so important. And if we could avoid killing the microbiome, then that would be great. But when it comes down to it, if it's a life and death situation, I think you would much prefer just giving your microbiome a little hit to make sure that you survive the infection. But it's possible. But I think it's quite far in the future, depending on how science develops and whether testing of these bacteria would get better anytime soon.
And so you said you were improving compounds that were already existing. Do you know the kind of time scale that it took to the team and to develop a new inhibitor?
Yeah, I'm not sure how long it took them. They don't typically tell you that in the scientific papers, but I do know that actually I came to the Netherlands 4 years ago for an internship, and I started working on a project. It was just the very beginnings of it, the very basics, and it turned out to be very promising. And I wasn't allowed to talk about it when I went back to give my presentation for my master's degree. But now, so this is like around 3 years after I left, no, 4 years now after I left, the project is now patented. So it took 4 years to kind of, for a PhD to take it on after I left, and for it to like fully get through everything and patent it, so now we can actually present it and everything. So that took quite some time. But then from here, there is like, if it's taken up by someone that wants to like try and develop it as an actual antibiotic, and then you've got all your clinical trials to go through. I don't know the exact numbers because I've never been involved in anything like this, but it's a long time to go from the actual discovery and development stage to having it used in the clinic.
It feels like you have to tread lightly when communicating your research, and like intellectual property in the field of antibiotic discovery is quite sensitive.
Yeah, I've really found it sensitive, because I had like prepared my entire presentation to talk about this project, and I sent it to my PI, and he was like, oh no, you can't talk about this. I was like, okay. Completely changed. But yeah, now there's always the fear, well, in academia anyway, of being scooped. I don't know if you heard that term before. Another group comes along and publishes a work before you. It happens. So they don't like to talk about it unless like you're kind of like, I guess, a trusted collaborator or something. But yeah, we don't typically talk about our research with a lot of people unless it's already been published.
And so, yeah, your work is in academia right now?
Yeah.
Does the university have partnerships with industry? Like, how does that work? Is it?
I'm not really sure. Like, I know that some of the people in my group have collaborations with industrial companies. But the problem is that not a lot of industrial companies want to put the time and research into antibiotic development, mm-hmm. because it's costly. And like I said earlier, you're likely to have resistance pop up for your antibiotic within 10 years of it being used. So you're going to put all this time and effort into developing it. And it's going to cost a lot of money. And then in the end, it's not going to give you as many profits as, say, like an anti-cancer therapy.
Yeah, but, I guess the economic viability of it is so tied to maybe also that discovery void we talked about earlier. And so... But I mean, in terms of preventing bacterial diseases, what are the industries directing their funding towards? Or is it just, you know, bacterial infections is kind of disregarded?
It's not disregarded. Like, we know that there is a major problem going to come up very soon.
Mm.
But there hasn't been as much in the way of development and industry. So a lot of academia is shouldering the responsibility at the moment. But I'm hoping it changes. I hope there's more incentives for companies to actually start tackling this problem, because it's going to take a team effort, you know, to overcome resistant bacteria.
Yeah, and I mean, some alternatives are kind of trying to be almost totally independent from antibiotics, like, for example, phage therapy.
It could be a really great tool for targeting resistant bacteria. Yeah. I don't know a lot about phage therapy, but yeah, it's really like anything that's going to work against resistant bacteria, I'm happy about. Antibiotics is just what we've been focused on for so long. If there is a new way to do it, then that's great as well. Right? If phage therapy, I think resistance is less likely to develop against phage therapy, which is nice, whereas compounds we use against bacteria are always going to have resistance pop up.
These inhibitors, they're not in the clinic yet, but what would be the estimated cost, or maybe some alternatives, like you say the serine and beta-lactamases already have inhibitors, because obviously, you know, thinking about low-income countries and the availability of antibiotics is essential. So is there a broad estimate of the cost of these kind of compound therapies, and are they, you know, viable in terms of actually being used in the population?
I'm not really sure about costs, but they're definitely, it's possible to use them. We have inhibitors of serum beta lactamases that are used in combination. You just get the combination therapy now from the doctor instead of just like both of them. It's like in one pill, I think.
And
Yeah, so it's given at the same time. And if we have a good inhibitor of the MBLs as well, and it goes through the clinical trials and everything's going well, then yeah, they'll be dosed together. It's very possible. And it's needed, I think, especially for these enzymes, as they can be pretty dangerous.
And then what, more specifically, are the bacteria that are problematic in terms of emerging resistance?
We have the... WHO has a list of the most critical resistant bacteria. So, and the top three on the list are carbapenem resistant, but we've also got the escape pathogens. So it's ESKAPE, and that stands for like the different species of bacteria. And I think two of those are gram positive, and then four are gram-negative bacteria.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just the problem is when bacteria develop resistance, they also have like crosstalking mechanisms, so they're able to maybe spread this resistance, and that's a major problem. And then we have some species that have multiple resistance mechanisms. And it's like, well, which antibiotic do you use to treat these ones? If they're just getting rid of all the ones you throw at it, they're the scary ones. But there's not as many of them yet. So yeah, because we don't know what's coming in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think, your line of research is so important, because I think the WHO says that causing more deaths than cancer and diabetes combined. So there's definitely...
Yeah, that's the scary part of it, right, is what can happen in the future and what's likely to happen. The other thing is with antibiotic resistance is that we use antibiotics to help us treat many other diseases. So you need surgery for like maybe a heart issue, you're given antibiotics because they've opened you up. Like, so if we have no antibiotics that are really working anymore, you're going to lose these surgeries that are also life-saving. And I think that's probably contributing to a lot of the deaths that we'll see in the future.
Like we're going to go, yeah, we're going to revert back. I mean, all the surgical process and everything will kind of be annihilated.
Yeah. If we don't introduce many new antibiotics, we're definitely going to revert back to how it was before we discovered penicillin, which is horrendous to think about. Because, yeah, life expectancy increased greatly once we found antibiotics. And you could have an infection as a kid, like you fell, you've cut your leg, there's a possibility that you wouldn't be able to treat that. And that's like, it's crazy to think about, and really hope that that doesn't happen and that we're able to solve or at least introduce more antibiotics soon before we get to that point.
Yeah, and I mean, it was kind of amazing to me. It's, all this has unfolded in barely a century. I mean, the penicillin development was around, I think, the 1940s. And we're all of these advances and regressions in, you know, not even 100 years.
But it's, yeah, it's difficult because also resistance has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bacteria, well, we got our antibiotics from bacteria themselves. You know, they produced it,
mm-hmm.
produced antibiotics so that they can win out against any other bacteria in their environment. So they produce this antibiotic, so they've also got to have resistance to it to make sure that the antibiotic doesn't kill themselves. So they've always had the resistance there. What's happening is because we are taking these antibiotics and using them, the resistant ones are surviving and spreading, but they also like maybe give each other the genes for resistance. And because we're using it at such a higher rate in the past 100 years, that's why it's spreading so rapidly. But they're fighting for survival, but you can't blame them, you know.
That's true. And I mean, going back to the microbiome, it's especially relevant because the bacteria, you know, in our gut, they're in these crowded environments where they have so much competition, so they probably harbor a lot of these antibiotic and antibiotic resistance genes, because, you know, that's the environment that they need to be competing in. So I guess it's this reservoir for the resistance is in us,
kind of. Very true, yeah. And that's why, like, if we've got an infection, it's very important to take your antibiotic for the dose that the doctor gave you, because if you stop too soon, maybe you've left some bacteria that have managed to survive and they can grow and spread again. Or maybe one of the bacteria had resistance, and if you stop your dose early, like if you had continued it, it would have killed the bacteria. But if you stop it and this bacteria that had resistance is like, oh, I'm no longer under any pressure, let's multiply. And then that's another way resistance spreads.
Yeah, and I mean, that's especially challenging for some infections like TB. I think you got to be taking your antibiotics for up to 6 months. So
yeah, it's not pleasant either. It's really not good for your gut, but and life or death for yourself, you know, you've got to choose whether your gut health or your life is important at that point.
Yeah, wow. Maybe you want to tell us to finish off what you're most excited about in the antibiotic discovery field, or you know, the kind of developments you're most anticipating in the years to come?
I mean, what I'm most excited about is just, I love just reading new papers or something where new antibiotics have been discovered, or it's a new target that we can start to exploit. Yeah, it just, for me, it's all very exciting because I'm a massive nerd and I love talking about antibiotics. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to see how scientists tackle this in the future. And hopefully as well, we mix it with good science communication to tell the public what is going on. And because as we know from like this past year with everything that's been going on with the pandemic, that science communication is key and this sort of thing. And I don't know a lot of people that actually know about antibiotic resistance. A lot of people think that means that our bodies are getting resistant to the antibiotics, not the bacteria themselves.
Oh, right, that it's a host mechanism, whereas it's the bacteria, right.
Yeah, so I'm hoping as well that the communication about this subject with the general public gets better, and that scientists are able to tackle this, well, get more funding for tackling this problem and hopefully coming up with some exciting new antibiotics really soon.
Yeah, so you're quite passionate about science communication. Do you want to maybe redirect potential listeners to your resources, or where should they go to learn more about antibiotics?
Yeah, sure. I have a website just now called the Antibiotics Blog that I'm going to be expanding on and teaching more about antibiotic resistance and what we can do to target it. And I've also got an Instagram, it's at science_chat, or you can find me on Twitter at NicolaWade_Kim. And I will talk about all about antibiotics there and share some new exciting stuff.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it then. Thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me.